Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, now twice on Radio MD, every Saturday, 3 to 5 and 5 to 7 p.m. Each week, we'll discuss the most important issues for you to take control of your health and your family's health, plus top guests at 3:30 and at 4:30 today, as well as 5:30 and 6:30. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Next, in less than a month, we go to podcasts. So when you hear the podcast, this is podcast 399, and the second hour is podcast 400 on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Today, we're going to discuss, if you will, longer walking distance to buy cigarettes. Does that increase quitting? Well, you'll have to turn in next week because I tweeted that too early. That's an embargoed story still. But what isn't embargoed is that quitting smoking actually widens your social network. Many smokers are afraid to quit, say they'll lose their friends. But in fact, you can quit with your friends, and forgetting even that, it widens the social network in some studies. The World Health Organization came out with how much exercise do you need to prevent heart disease and cancer. Guess what? It's the exact same number that RealAge calculated more than a decade and a half ago. So we got it right 15 or 16 years ago. It's in the RealAge workout. We'll review that today in the second hour. And another, if you have long-term weight loss, what determines whether you're going to be successful after gastric bypass surgery? And that brings up the ethical dilemma. Should we be paying for gastric bypass surgery in people who bring this on themselves? That is, who bring weight loss, weight gain, and obesity, and then fatty liver disease and cirrhosis. Should we be paying those couple million dollars it takes to take care of them? Or should we say, no, this is rationed out. We can't afford this anymore. We'll get to that as well, because that's an ethical question that we as a society are going to have to answer. And another one, should we be making it legal? That is marijuana. 33 million people use it. Not as many as use alcohol. 176 million admit to doing that with some routine. But should we make it legal if 33 million are doing it? And I'll talk to you about my point of view on that. Because like alcohol, it has some downside. And maybe we say there is a trade-off, and how do you get the trade-off right? And do we let people do whatever they want? But again, just like food, if we let them eat whatever they want, gain weight whenever they want, get obese and get hepatic failure, do we then pay for their problem? That is, cirrhosis of the liver or liver cancer. Do we pay for their problems if they get hooked on marijuana or hooked on alcohol? And do we do it once or do we do it none? That is the question. So those are real ethical dilemmas as we get into a society that can't pay as much as we need to pay. The low risk, there's a wonderful study out looking at major surgery, 36,000 patients who got narcotics afterwards. How many of them got hooked because of the narcotics? Not many. And that's the question, do we avoid narcotics or do you try and avoid narcotics if you have pain just because there is a low risk of getting hooked, or is that low risk too great? And then who pays for that too? A lot of ethical questions today. And we will get to the next question, which is the big one in Miami. 28 patients in Miami have Zika from mosquitoes in Miami. We're going to talk to one of the real experts on what works to prevent the Zika infections. That is, what works for preventing mosquito bites? And where do you have to worry about it? If you're in Montana, do you have to worry about it? How about Ohio? How about where in Florida? If you're in, and we have a big station in Orlando and another one in Tampa that carries this program, do you have to worry about it in those areas? How about Connecticut? And what are the two types of Aedes mosquitoes? And is that second type showing the same issue as the first type? That's our guest segment with David P. Willis at the end of this hour. In the second hour, what are the purple dots on Michael Phelps? That's right. Cupping has an Olympic moment. What is it? Should you try it? Who gets the benefit from it? And again, we're going to say and talk about if Olympians get too much exercise, what's the data on Olympic heart disease and Olympians developing arrhythmias and dying early for their age? And again, this again comes back to that question, what about Olympians? If they develop heart disease because of their choice of competing in the Olympics, do we pay for, or trying to compete, do we try and pay for that? And, or is that part of, comes out of part of their winning? And, of course, most of the Olympians don't win, so many of them don't have winnings like Michael Phelps does, to pay for it. Phelps. Well Beyond Wellness, heartburn, GERD, and Strita. That is, heartburn is a major problem in America. We're going to talk about another new therapy for strengthening the muscle with a radio frequency called Strita with Dr. Anish Aseth, who's a physician in the Princeton Medical Group in New Jersey. Water okay? You heard that there are high levels of toxic chemicals now in 6 million Americans. Do you have to worry? And then Jim Graham's going to talk to us about the algae blooms and what we're doing about it, what you should as an individual do about it. Farmers, unlike industrial plants that are regulated in their runoff, regulated in what they put into the rivers and streams, ever since the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland, outside of Cleveland, caught fire, industrial waste has been regulated, but farm waste has not. And that farm waste, as you heard about Toledo last year, caused a shutdown because of algae blooms and the neurotoxin from those algae blooms. What are we doing about it? Is it getting worse? Is it getting better? Is there anything we're doing? Jim Graham's going to talk to us about that. And how just a little stricter air pollution standards could save thousands annually. We're also going to talk about the real age tip of the week, slow down aging. And you know aging relates to telomere length. That telomeres, those ends of your chromosomes that allow the chromosomes to replicate, especially the ends on your stem cells. That's what allows your stem cells to come in and repair your heartburn area or your sunburn area or heart attack or stroke. Those are those key things to repair, and we need to get those repaired, if you will. And the way to do it is to increase your telomere length and your stem cells. So eat this dinner, our real age tip of the week, slow down aging with this dinner choice. That's all for in this hour we will have. This is, again, podcast number 799 on
30.
You, the Owner's Manual radio show on Radio MD. Let's get to one quick one. Quitting smoking may actually widen your social network. Well, in fact, we don't have time for that now. So I'm going to tell you the goal of Radio MD is the same as our goal for you to stay well. You can always get a podcast on iHealth or from RadioMD.com. We'll be right back.
RadioMD.com. It's your life, your health, it's your show. with you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to podcast number 799, live show, though, on you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD, where we hope you will stay well. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show and podcast is a passionate area where you'll find the latest in health news and the action steps that allow you to take control of you and your family's health so you can live at the top of your curve. Some smokers may fear that quitting will result in losing friends, but the opposite seems to be true, according to a new study. That's right. They did this study in a number of areas, and what they found was that smokers may worry that trying to quit will alienate them from other smokers. And that's a definite concern that smokers tell us. They're worried that their friends won't want to hang out with them. And what we've seen, though, is an incredible trend to the less commonness, if you will, or the less frequency of people smoking. Now only 15% of Americans, now it's higher in Ohio, where a number of our stations are, but it still is only around 24% in Ohio. That's caused by one of our former governors, not the current governor, our former governor, took all the money out of smoking cessation. My wife tells me I've got to not call him stupid, but the action stupid. The action that that governor took, Ted Strickland, to take all the money out is the largest cost for Ohio and the largest made of non-competitiveness for Ohio. More than a million, it's 880,000 is the official number, 880,000 people. The governor not preventing, that's comparing our state, which was at the national average, with the national average. And that will cost our companies and, if you will, our government about $2 billion more a year in medical costs. Who should be paying for that? Brings up the ethical question. If you make choices that cost the rest of society money, should you be paying for it? In fact, the tobacco taxes only pay about 7%. They only pay about 7% of the medical costs that smoking causes. So who should pay for this? If a person gets smoke-related illness, should it be that that person either has to pay or they don't get medical care? That is, if they don't have insurance that covers it, then all that extra cost they have to pay, and that we shouldn't, in fact, have insurance, if you will, for the smokers, or that they would have to be in a separate pool. Well, that's the ethical question. But in fact, this study didn't look at that question. This study looked at another item. That is, will they lose friends? And the fact that smoking is less common, that they looked at 691 smokers enrolled in a smoking cessation trial, including a number of friends, new members, smoking habits, and romantic partner smoking. In over a three-year period, participants were tested for the chemical byproducts of smoking to whether they had successfully quit or not. The researchers matched these results to changes in their social network. And what turned out is as the smokers quit, their social networks broadened. They got more friends, more intimate people that associated with them. So it was both good for their sex life and good for their social life. So smoking, yeah, you can quit it, and you widen, not narrow, your social network. So that's a great piece of news, if you will, from that study. How do you determine if you'll have long-term weight gain after gastric bypass surgery? That is, who will have long-term weight gain after gastric bypass surgery? And this brings up the other question. Most of the people who undergo gastric bypass surgery are those who have failed multiple attempts at losing weight. Do we give them, how do we treat these people? Again, is it, if they've gained weight, most of the groups say everyone can lose weight if they can stop eating as much and exercise more, but many don't. And maybe it's because they're addicted to food. We don't have a food addiction tax, if you will. But how do we determine who's going to lose weight or not lose weight after gastric bypass surgery? And should we, in fact, pay for it? Well, it turns out there's a wonderful article on who will lose weight. And you say, well, who does lose weight? It is very few preoperative clinical factors were associated with weight change in a long-term postoperative course, that is, over the next 2 years. And what it turned out was those who actually were able to exercise beforehand, those who were able to lose weight beforehand were the ones who stayed with it, and that preoperative insulin use, history of smoking, and use of more medications all were associated with it. That is, when they quit smoking, when they were able to stop using medicines, and when they continued exercising and were able to lose weight beforehand, those were characteristics. So do you pay for gastric bypass once? What do we do? And then what happens if they develop the complications of type 2 diabetes? Again, who pays for that? Do they have a extra premium on this preventable disease? And what do we do about that? And will they do that? Right now, we have insurance pools that are basically either employee-generated or geographic area, meaning state by state. And that's one of the problems with the Obamacare thing, that people who are going to pools have a adverse selection bias. That is, they're sicker, they're more expensive, they do less good things for themselves, they're higher incidence of smokers, higher incidence of the obese. And the question is, should they, because they're bringing it on themselves to a large degree, have to pay for this? Or do we still have a pool, much like Canada does, or much like Great Britain does? And you say, how can Great Britain and Canada afford it? Well, they can't. Great Britain's medical costs increased 43% this year. It's one of the things that's making their government less economic, running a deficit. Same thing with many of that in Canada. And there is de facto rationing in both Canada and in Great Britain by age and by other medical conditions. When we come back, we'll get into that much more in podcast 400, along with what amount of exercise you have to do to stay well. But right now, we're going to talk to one of the world's experts on what works for Zika prevention. That is, what works for mosquitoes. And in a wonderful way, we're going to learn what you can do to prevent that mosquito bite from getting to you with a world expert on this. The key man on this, in fact, will be David P. Willis, what mosquito repellents really work. And he's also going to talk to us about where these mosquitoes will go and which of us has to worry about these mosquitoes. We'll be right back with David P. Willis on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Radio MD. MD.com.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Michael Roizen, MD. Here's Dr. Mike.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, the passionate show that helps you take control of your health so that you can live at the top of the curve for as long as you want to. We're here with David P. Willis. Mr. Willis is a reporter. The website is att.com. And the reason we got him is he wrote this, what I would call, brilliant article on the scams of Zika and what really does work. And he's done more research on this than I know of anyone. So let's go right to David. David, thank you for coming on. And tell us, where's Zika? Where do we have to worry about Zika? We know it's in Miami. We've heard of it being, obviously, more than 1,000 cases this last week alone in Puerto Rico. 28 in Miami-Dade area. Will it get to the rest of the country? What areas will it get to?
Hi, Dr. Mike. How are you? Well, thank you. The Zika virus is pretty much around the Florida area and in the Caribbean islands. I mean, where I am up here in New Jersey, it's mostly travel-related cases where people have gone out of the country and then come back and found to have it. And but I would say that really is in the warm climates near other centers. So the mosquitoes are making their way to places like Florida, as you mentioned.
Now, as I understand it, there are two brands of Aedes mosquitoes, two genres of Aedes mosquitoes. The Aegypti, which also carries a number of other things such as dengue fever, but there's a more ubiquitous Aedes genre that comes all the way up through New Jersey, through New York, through Connecticut, Massachusetts, even Ohio, and much of California that can also carry this virus. So many of us are at risk. And in the second segment, I'm going to ask you what you would do if someone forced you to take a Caribbean vacation or Puerto Rican vacation now.
Sure.
But let's talk about what does work. What can you do to prevent a mosquito bite? And do they prevent all mosquitoes or just the Aedes mosquitoes? Or
Centers for Disease Control recommends using a skin-applied insect repellent that's been registered with the EPA. And what that means is that the repellent has been tested. So oftentimes when you see a mosquito repellent that says that it's natural or all natural, that might not mean that the efficacy of the repellent has been proven by science. So what the mosquito folks have told me is that what you're really looking for is a repellent that contains ingredients such as DEET, which is a powerful insecticide, and it should have at least a 30% formulation on it, and it should say that on the label.
So, 30% formulation of DEET, and you put it right on the skin.
You put it right on the skin.
Closed areas?
Correct. You put it on the skin.
Closed areas?
Yes.
Where do you put it?
Well, you could put it on your hands. You could put it on your arms. You could put it on your neck, you know. On your, you know,
any
places where mosquitoes will bite
you.
You could put it on your face as well. You shouldn't use it on infants less than 2 months of age. And you, so,
that's because the infants that DEET does have some, if you will, side effects both in perhaps stimulating abnormal cell formation and also inhibiting neurologic development. Is that right?
That would make sense to me. I mean, there are other methods. There are other things you can use. You can have a repellent that has a picardin, which is a synthetic derivative of pepper plants. That has a 20% formulation you should get, and that can repel mosquitoes and ticks and other insects.
So you put that on the clothes or on the skin itself?
You put
too?
That on the skin too, I believe. You know,
and now,
you could also put it on your skin, but you really need to make sure that open areas of skin are covered.
So you don't want you want to cover all the open areas with either Picardin or DEET. 30% DEET, 20% Picardin.
Yes.
Now, what about these essential oils? I've seen essential oils, oil of eucalyptus and citronella advertised, and even in these little spray cans. Do those work to keep mosquitoes at bay?
I mean, it's oil of lemon eucalyptus, which is a natural product. That would have a 40% formulation. I don't think, in order to really make sure that you don't have mosquito bites, you need to actually apply it to your skin. You know, actually apply it, from what I've been told.
And now, how thick does the clothing you wear? In other words, mosquitoes, I've been told, do bite or can bite through clothing.
Sure.
How thick do you have to have that?
I'm not so sure. I don't quite have the answer to that. But you know, there's nothing wrong with applying the spray on your clothes to kind of make sure that it's repelled. But the key is to make sure that you have that EPA and certified repellent and not something else that might not do what you want to do.
Is there, I was told there also is a mechanical fogger that is something that puts out CO2, and somehow the mosquitoes sense the CO2 and go towards it and then can be electrified, if you will, or eradicated that way. Does that work?
I've been told to kind of avoid those types of things, I would need to see proof that it works, to be honest. I mean, I know that there are, there are mosquito control agencies that do spray with insecticide, and you have to stay in your house, and they put out warnings and that type of thing. But in terms of other kinds of foggers or, I've heard about other methods of keeping mosquitoes away. I'm not sure how much those would work. I do know that there are candles and things like that that have had some efficacy. But in terms of electrifying them, and I would be kind of wary.
Gotcha. Now, the Zika virus, we know it causes, during pregnancy, it appears to attach to nervous system tissue preferentially and decrease reproduction of that tissue, that is, growth of those tissues, which cause microencephalopathy or microcephalopathy, which decreases the size of the brain growth. But it also is associated with Guillain-Barré and some other problems in adults. Are those reversible?
I do not know. I'm a consumer reporter, so I'm kind of able to help with kind of ways that people can protect themselves, but I'm not so sure on the medical side of things.
Okay, well, when we come back, I'll give you my take on that, and then we'll also talk about, from a consumer reporter standpoint, if you're planning a Caribbean vacation next year, or if you're planning to go to the South, even this year, what would you do if you're going? Would you continue that, or would you say, this year I'm going to take a skiing vacation or try and avoid warm weather areas in the winter? And what do you expect to come back from the Olympics? Who do you expect to have been bitten or has contracted Zika? We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with David Willis, app.com.
Hey. And now, back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. We're with David P. Wells, the consumer reporter who's done this great work on what does work and what doesn't work for Zika prevention, for mosquito bite prevention. If you look at the maps, and CDC has some great maps out on the range of vectors. There are two mosquitoes, Aedes aegypti, that carry it. And most of us believe, by the way, most of us who studied mosquito vector disease, they spread wherever that mosquito does pretty well. And they do that because gusts of winds come up, and although the mosquito may only go 150 meters normally, when the gust of wind comes up, it travels wherever the wind takes it. And they're pretty promiscuous in having relationships that yield new mosquitoes with other mosquitoes, if you will. So other of their branches. So the Aedes aegypti, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky, the bottom half of Ohio, Wisconsin, Virginia, gets New Jersey, gets into Connecticut, gets the tip of Pennsylvania, gets, of course, New York City, Arizona, half of California, New Mexico, all of Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Arkansas, and into Missouri and Kansas. On the other hand, the Aedes albopictus, way up into Ohio, looks like it even gets to Cleveland, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, New Mexico, Arizona, and the same part of California. So I suppose if I was planning a vacation and I were in the pregnancy-bearing ages or thinking about getting pregnant, I'd avoid those states in the summer and probably try and take a vacation in the winter where the cold was more common, where the mosquito wasn't. What about you, David?
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Mike, I was talking to a local person up here in New Jersey a couple months ago, who I tried to help get her flight, reimbursed by the airline because she was so frightened about going to Caribbean island during the Zika virus. And luckily, she was able to get her refund because the CDC put that island on the list of where there were actual Zika cases. So, I mean, one of the first things I'd do is, before I left on that vacation, I would go around the house, go around my property, and make sure that I didn't have any standing water around so that I wouldn't have a mosquito infestation when I returned from my break. But I would also check, you mentioned that CDC website, I would check there to see what might await me. And I'd also come loaded with repellent. You know, if you're not worried about getting pregnant or in a relationship where that might happen, you might be okay just to go and enjoy yourself, but make sure you're really well covered.
Long clothes.
I would wear clothes. I mean, I would wear clothes before Zika when I'm going out and I'm out in the in the woods, and I'd have sleeves on, and wouldn't be wearing shorts in the woods for ticks. I mean, just that kind of thing. I mean, I think it's all about just kind of having your head on your shoulders and kind of being smart about things.
And now, one of the things you said is ticks. So a lot of the country has ticks, and is DEET the repellent that works for them as well?
Well, I think I was told that the Picardin works for ticks too. I would think DEET would as well. I mean, these give you about 4 hours of protection. So I would think that they would that would work too. But yeah, you wear light clothes, and so you can see the ticks on you when you're coming back home
now,
again.
One of the things that attracted me to your article was that, and again, it's ATP.com. David P. Willis is the consumer reporter. But one of the things that attracted me to that article was that you talked about the scams that don't work. That
sure.
is, the FCC, I think it is the FCC, maybe it's the CDC, has put out data on these things that don't work as mosquito repellents or preventing Zika. Tell
Sure.
us about those.
Sure. Well, you know, the FTC has made charges, recently had a settlement with a company that made deceptive claims when it marketed these mosquito bands, which you would put on your wrists. They contained some kind of mint oil and created a vapor barrier that shielded people within 5 feet from mosquito bites and would provide 120 hours of protection. The thing is, these claims are not scientifically supported. So recently, the FTC sent out some letters to 10 online marketers warning them that their Zika protection claims must be supported by reliable scientific evidence. And so you need to be really careful when you look for different things. There have been dryer sheets that have been said that they're going to, that would help repel mosquitoes. There have been electric barriers and all sorts of things. So you really need to, before you spend money, you got to really be careful about what you're about to buy, because you might get ripped off and it might not work. So what's the point, right?
Now the mosquito nets do work. Is that right?
Mosquito nets would be fine. I'm talking about these net. It's like a barrier where they say that there's either a vapor or some kind of electric force field or magnetic field, or that a magnetic field would repel the mosquito, or it makes the sound of dragonfly wings, which are the enemies of mosquitoes. I mean, all that types of stuff I've been told is just nonsense and unproven. You're really looking for ways of preventing mosquito bites that are proven by science, I think.
And that's one of the keys, that the work you have done shows that 30% DEET and 20% Picardin are really good to put on.
Yeah,
and
those are
the other things. I am a strong believer, by the way, that in addition to being dangerous for pregnant people, since we know that our nervous systems are plastic now, continue to grow and get bigger or get more connections with time, that our memories are stored, that's probably the genesis of some of the Guillain-Barré and other problems in adults, and that this new mutation of the Zika virus is hazardous to all of us. So I urge you to take precaution with getting rid of the standing water, load yourself up with repellent and use it, and wear long clothes. We'll be right back after these messages for you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, podcast 400 coming up, and we have a great guest for you, two guests.